Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom, and crickets, because John is still on vacation. But I have what is arguably the next best thing.
The senior version.
I have John Senior.
Or the senior citizen.
Right. I've got Elliot. Elliot's here on, we're on a video chat because his schedule and my schedule just didn't lend itself to getting together in person. However, it was also a last minute topic that some of our listeners had asked for with regards to, some incidents that had been happening in law enforcement recently. So we thought we'd get together and just discuss it. I do kind of wish John was here and not on vacation, because I know we're going to revisit this topic. And this is also partly what's been kind of going on that's, I think, going to lead into our big conversation episode about selection, the hiring process, and how does the public need to have an honest conversation with the police department about what they want in their cops? And then we just adjust the selection process, or do we need to go back to our older selection process? Because holy hell, this is just, we're in this weird middle ground where people are.
Well, wait a minute. We might not need a selection process pretty soon.
That's true.
I mean, let's be honest. If we're going to be honest, what selection?
Yeah. We're going to defund all the cops. I could tell you right now, everybody I talk to, I tell them the same thing. I say, I've got more bullets than patience at this point. So if they want to go back to the Wild Wild West, I'll play.
Yeah, you know, this whole gun thing is, that's, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it. A friend of mine that I was talking to that works at a gun store. Well, and I think on the podcast that we did a while back with a friend of yours that has a gun shop.
Yeah, the chief, right? My old chief.
Yeah, that chief up there. I mean, so a guy down here locally saying that how many arguments he was getting into with people that are coming in and buying guns and realize they can't walk out with the gun.
Right.
Yeah.
Can't you sell me one through the loopholes? Just use one of those loopholes and sell me a gun.
It was some ridiculous number of like 7,000 or 7,200 in 1 month in the state of California for DOJ background checks. Mm. And I think it was 81% or 82% were first time buyers.
Yeah. I heard a very interesting statistic on Dan Crenshaw, who, like, that's my guy, man. Dan, yeah. I'd vote for that guy to freaking open an envelope. I don't care.
I agree.
I like him and I like what he stands for. But, he pissed off some gun people when he talked about red flag laws and this and that and the other thing. But if you actually listen to what the guy says, he's really super common sense. And the moment he was on Joe Rogan's podcast, and the moment, you know, Joe Rogan's talking about gun control and how do you square off against somebody who walks in with an assault rifle, and Dan Crenshaw's like, it's not that hard to take an assault rifle away from somebody. I could do it and I could show you how in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And he was not stone cold killer, like Navy SEAL. Like, that's, you're more scared of that than you should be. And Joe Rogan's like, really?
Just, oh my gosh.
Well, cause the average person doesn't realize what tactics are. They don't realize what, you know, really you can do, you know, with gun takeaways. You know, the whole adage, never bring a knife to a gunfight, works the opposite way. Never bring a gun to a knife fight, because if you get close to somebody with a gun,
right,
they can take it away from you faster than you can know what to do with it.
Right. We've had at least a couple of people, friends of ours, that are you know, guns are for the military and cops and nobody needs guns and blah, blah, blah. We've had two conversations now on what gun should I buy.
Right. I saw a meme the other day that said, if after 243 years, the government changes their mind and decides you shouldn't have guns, it's probably because they're about to do something you'd shoot them for.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a reason we have all these guns. Wow.
But no, the statistic he said was that the background checks are being done. They're being done in a way where if you described the process and the system used to do the background checks, they get more false positives than they should because of the way the system looks for, you know, phonetic similarities and all this other stuff. And you hear the guy talk about it, and he talks about something like 80% of all the denials in backgrounds are false positives, right?
Oh, wow. Wow.
And so they point to the background checks denying people their ability to own a gun as how effective background checks are. And these Dan Crenshaw and this gun expert that he had on were pointing out that, no, that's not true, because literally 80% of those denials are false denials based on bad information and poor matches. And he said, if the private sector was using, you go ask, you know, Target or another company that does background checks on their employees, if they were allowed to deny somebody employment based on a phonetic, you know, right, similar, oh, well, it sounds similar, so it must be the same person, so we're going to deny them a job, they'd be sued out of existence.
Right. That is correct.
And yet, that's the system.
Government get away with it. Yeah. Government get away with it.
All different when you actually get to make the rules, right?
Right.
Really. Yeah. So, but that's not what this, well, that's a whole, that gun control, that's a locker room podcast episode. Cause let me tell you, gun control is learning to shoot with both hands.
That's exactly what it is.
That's really all this whole thing should be. But I can tell you for 100% fact that this episode is about, what some of the things that we've been requested to talk about, police shootings and when they go bad, quote unquote. For example,
even when they're good,
even when they're, yeah. So we were asked to talk about Ryan Whitaker specifically, but I thought we would also talk about some of the other cases that have happened recently. For example, there was the no-knock warrants discussion that happened on our Facebook page, because we were talking about, we posted a meme that said, if you don't break the law, the police don't come and get you.
And, well, that's a simple concept, isn't it?
Well, then we had a bunch of people talking about no-knock warrant. Well, they started citing cases where the police had kicked in a door and shot a quote-unquote innocent person. And they were, a lot of them were no-knock warrants.
Now let me say something about that, because I've had conversations on this end about no-knock warrants. I can't speak for the rest of the country. I can speak for at least what I experienced.
Right.
In order to get a no-knock warrant, it's not that easy. You have got to have a lot of reason, to number one, have nighttime service, and number two, to have a no knock. And
yes.
So I can tell you, in all of the search warrants that I've been involved in, and I can't even tell you how many I've been involved in narcotics, we had a handful of nighttime service, and that's about it. And we're talking hundreds upon hundreds of search warrants served. So I don't know what the rules are. I mean, maybe the rules are different in other states where it's actually very simple to get, because it does open a little bit of a can of worms.
Yes.
With a no-knock warrant. It means dangerous for the people inside and dangerous for the officers. It's just dangerous.
So I'll tell you this. Let's just start with what I can attest to and what you can attest to through personal experience. Number one, we have both written and executed search warrants, right?
Right.
We have both written and executed dope search warrants, which can be some of the most dangerous, dynamic. You know, it's not like serving a search warrant on some guy to get his computer where he can't flush it down the toilet.
Right.
Right. This, you know, dope warrants, they have to be more dynamic because by their very nature, the evidence can get disappeared.
Destroyed. Yeah.
And real quick. So we've both done them.
There's a reason Yuri can break the bathroom window. Right. But anyway, go on.
Let's talk about a flashbang on a stick. The bang stick.
I don't know anything about it.
Their bang sticks are amazing. So anyway, the California rules, there isn't a no-knock warrant in California. It's no such thing, right?
Right.
Only because what we have decided in California, which I arguably is a better system than writing or a judge signing a no-knock warrant, is the ability to kind of circumvent knock notice and make entry without a knock or notification is a decision that has to be made by the officers serving the search warrant at the door at the time they're serving it.
But you still need approval for that.
Well, so for example, we did a case, right? And they were selling dope at the base of a high school. And we were very secretive about it because obviously, you know, if anyone hears that this, you know, house at the base of the high school is going down, word travels fast and they're going to, you know, shake the spot and we're going to lose all the dope and they'll be totally clean. So we went to serve it, but the location was set up in such a way that we either had to come through the high school to serve it from their blind side, or we had to go through the neighborhood and then cross in front of a bay window that was always open. There was never any blinds on it. So we had to cross in front of this bay window to go to the front door. And rather than endanger the kids and come through the high school, we chose to endanger ourselves and go past the bay window because it was safer option for innocence. Right. And as we're approaching, and we're coming across the bay window, we hear the screen doors open and we hear, and I see one of the guys inside go, "Mom, cops are here."
Right. So therefore,
and they
he
start
made,
getting
he made notification
up,
for you.
Right. And they get up and start walking back into the house. And at that point we just started yelling, "Police, search warrant, demand entry," but we didn't knock. We didn't wait. We went right in.
Right.
And that was the equivalent of a no-knock warrant. The decision was made at the time because they had been able, we could articulate, they were able to identify that we were police officers,
right,
and we stated what we were there to do. Knock notice, their knock notice requirements had been met based on the exigency. We could go in so they didn't flush the dope, blah, blah, blah. But that was a decision we had to make at the door. We had to make at the time. There's no judge that's going to sign a piece of paper that says, "I don't care what the circumstances are. You don't have to knock. You just can go in."
The nighttime service on that one.
Now, nighttime
service. Because you did need that.
Right.
That's really what I was referring to.
Yeah. So night service, for those who don't know, warrants can only be served in California between certain hours. And you have to beg, plead, scrape, kneel, kowtow. You have to go to a judge unless you get a super friendly, understanding judge that you've got a good rapport with. And you better make a damn good case why you can serve that warrant at 4 a.m. instead of at 7 a.m.
Right.
And that's how it is in California. Now, there are other states where the judge will sign a little disclaimer saying that due to the nature of the search warrant, the knock notice requirement has been waived and cops can just make entry. I don't have any experience with that as a, like an actual tactic. Because as far as I know, as far as any warrant I worked on, unless you could articulate at the time why you were going to kick the door down without knocking and demanding entry and announcing yourself, there was no quote unquote knock notice exemption written on the warrant. Right.
That's correct.
So I can only speak from the experiences we're talking about. So if we have other cops that want to send us messages about no-knock warrants and what their experiences are, that's fine. But it seems to me to make more sense to leave it up to the officers, because there's going to be always more than one. The search warrant team is hopefully going to be your best and your brightest if they're serving warrants, right? They're not some fat lop who, you know, or he's not some political hack because they don't serve warrants unless they're on other cops.
Well, there you go. That's a good point.
So you're theoretically going to have your best and your brightest, and you should be able to trust them to make that decision at the door as to whether there is exigent circumstances to skip the knock notice requirement.
Well, I'll tell you what I see coming if it's not already there. You've already explained the whole no knock here in California. But even with nighttime service and no knocks in other states, the question is going to be, well, if it's that dangerous that you need to not identify yourselves and nighttime service, or not nighttime service, but you don't have to identify yourselves, then why doesn't SWAT serve the warrant?
Well, and in some cases, SWAT is serving the warrant.
I was going to say, and then that's coming. And then the next step would be, and which I totally understand, and I am by no means an expert when it comes to SWAT operations, but then you'll just have a surrounding call out.
Right.
Because it's safer for the officers. It's safer for the people inside. And then what do you have?
Well, then you have the situation where you're not going to catch anybody and you're going to serve a bunch of warrants and nobody's going to go to jail because all the evidence has been flushed.
There's no evidence unless you already have, you know, controlled buys into a certain, you know, a very specific suspect that you know is in a house. So he'll be going to jail for the buys, but you're not going to get anything additional because, like you said, they're going to be able to destroy everything, order pizza, have a couple of beers, and then come out.
Yeah. So now, in the cases of no-knock warrants, I just looked up the most recent one that got referenced on our Instagram is Breonna Taylor. Now, they called it an unwarranted raid, according to, and they were at the wrong house for a suspect that was already in custody. That's not entirely.
Yeah, I don't think that was fully.
Yeah, so that's not entirely accurate. The police did have a legitimate reason to investigate that apartment, and they did get service for a no-knock warrant. And while the woman who was shot had no criminal record and no drugs were found in her apartment, she was receiving packages on behalf of her ex-boyfriend, Jamarcus Glover, who police suspected of being a drug trafficker.
Right.
So it's not as if, in the Breonna Taylor case, just as an example, it's not as if the police didn't have a legitimate reason to serve a search warrant on her. They did.
Right. And just so people understand, going back from some of the narcotics investigations, House A could be the main house of the main suspect. But in the course of my investigation, if the main suspect at some point goes to House B and goes to House C and House D, guess what's part of the search warrant when I'm hitting House A?
Right.
B, C, D, and E.
And so, I'll give you a generic example is I was working undercover. We spoke to the main, the drug dealer I was dealing with. He said, oh, I don't know how much that's going to be. Let me call you right back. Then the surveillance team sees him come out of his apartment.
Right.
Go to another downstairs, apartment and go to our
house. Exactly.
And then 60 seconds after he's in this other apartment, my cell phone, my undercover cell phone rings and he calls me back and I'm on speakerphone and somebody's whispering the prices to him in the background. So guess whose apartment just got added to our investigation?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I get it. So people understand that. It's just not a random house that they decided to hit. It was part of the investigation, and they probably had evidence to support that, and that's why they did it.
Now, as far as the necessity and the probable cause for a no-knock at a location like that, I didn't read the affidavit. I have no idea. But here's the circumstances. Yes. Dope dealers do get ripped off by other dope dealers dressed as cops. That's actually a thing, and that actually does happen. There are requirements for how cops have to be marked, you know, and how that how those markings are documented in the report so that you can make sure that when something goes bad, you know, they knew that, or they should have reasonably known that you guys were in fact police and this wasn't some sort of dope rip.
And on a side note to that, among many reasons, that's why if you're, at least with LAPD when I was doing it, if you're the undercover officer that's dealing with the suspect, you are not part of that search warrant.
Right. Ever.
You are no way part of that search warrant. You are hidden somewhere and he doesn't see you because of that reason.
He doesn't even see you until you go to court.
Exactly. He thinks you're a dope dealer this whole time. And next thing you know, you're busting through the door with a bunch of guys. Well, what do you think is going to happen?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there are many other reasons, but that's one of them.
Not to mention the fact that when he sees your face and he realizes you're a cop and you're in the heat of the moment, he might get pissed and try to take revenge or do something stupid or whatever. In fact, the guy I was talking about in that example of the upstairs downstairs is a legit case I worked. And the look on his face when I walked into court wearing a suit and a badge and swore in and they, you know, asked what my position was, the look of shock on his face was pretty hilarious.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
Because he thought I was just an informant that rolled on him.
Right. You know? Yeah.
But anyway, so no knock warrants are only supposed to be signed, as far as my understanding goes, in the most exigent of circumstances where you can show there's a prerequisite danger of destruction of evidence or some sort of danger posed to the officers. In the Breonna Taylor case, if somebody can get the affidavit and show it to us, then I can tell you whether or not I legitimately believe there should have been a no knock. But obviously these guys got a judge.
Yeah. A judge signed
sign it,
it
and right. say that a no knock warrant was allowed. And then unfortunately this woman, Breonna Taylor, who there were no drugs there and she may have been receiving packages unknowingly or knowingly, but either way, she wasn't armed and she was, as far as the evidence goes, not able to be proved to be involved, but she got shot and killed. So we'll never know. But that doesn't mean the police didn't have a legitimate reason to be there. Right. Which then takes us to these other two cases that we're going to be discussing that we've been asked about. The most recent one, as I said, was Ryan Whitaker. And then the other one is, and forgive me if I butchered the name, a Tatiana Coquis Jefferson. And she was shot in her home in Fort Worth, Texas, or shot in her apartment in Fort Worth, Texas, like way early hours of the morning through a window by a police officer responding to a call for service. But the reason we're going to talk about those is because in the Ryan Whitaker case and in the A. Tatiana case, whether the shooting was justified or not isn't really, I guess, at issue. You and I have both looked at the video, and in both cases, you would be able to articulate why the officer pulled the trigger. Whether or not we would have is a different question. But we're not that officer. We're Graham versus Connor, based on their training and experience, based on their mindset, based on the information they had at the time. That's the only way the case can be judged, right?
Right. And really we're going to video again. And I've said this before, you know, even when you have all the video, it's still really difficult to put yourself in that officer's brain right at that moment when it was all happening. But I can tell you that when I looked at the video from the non-shooting officer, and this just shows how things are so easily distorted. When I first looked at that video of the non-shooting officer, it looked to me as though the guy was giving up. Mm-hmm. That was my initial thought, and I played it over probably about 20 times. It looked like he was putting his hand up, his left hand up, and he was giving up. And then you could hear the shots going off. But then I finally found the video from, because my initial thought was, gosh, I mean, I can't put myself in that officer's shoes. You know, he's trying to get this. He identified himself as Phoenix police. He's asking the guy to come outside. The guy comes outside. He comes out aggressively.
Right. Maybe we should just real quick review. Do you want to just review for everybody and kind of go down by the numbers how the call transpires?
Go ahead. Oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah, if you can.
Yeah, I think it was a radio call by a neighbor of basically a disturbance in that apartment. it almost sounded like there was really not much there, but the person reporting it wanted the police to go to that apartment.
He was reporting it as a domestic, right?
Domestic,
a verbal domestic.
That's what it sounded like.
And they asked. Now this is hindsight, guys. They asked, "Is there violence or is it getting physical?" And the guy said, "If that will get you here faster."
Yeah, he did say something like that. So it seemed almost like it was not a bogus call, but this guy obviously had something with that apartment and wanted the cops to show up.
Right, and even when you can hear on the officers' body cams, when they show up, they go, "Did you love all that helpful information the RP gave?" So they already know that the reporting party was a little full of shit, or they think he could have been.
Yeah. And really, they almost sound like, "This whole call is bullshit. I've got more important stuff to do." And they really want to leave.
Right.
Is really what they want to do.
Right. So I the listeners, for any of you listeners with any sort of a modicum of law enforcement experience, whether it's being on the job yourself or being married or related to somebody who's on the job, you've probably heard that domestic violence calls are some of the most dangerous calls that cops can ever go on. And there's a very, very, very big reason for that, which is they're volatile. The emotions are at their peak. They're unpredictable. And more importantly, what seems to happen is when enforcement action starts to take place against one party, typically the man, then all of a sudden the wife who wanted him dead before you arrived
now wants to kill you,
jumps on your back and tries to stab you with a knife.
Right.
Because how dare you take her man to jail? Or how dare you take my girlfriend to jail, or whatever it's going to be.
That's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other thing. And in this case, they go to this domestic violence call. Well, unbeknownst to them, I guess this dude, either the previous night or a couple of nights earlier that week, he'd gotten a weird aggressive knock on his door.
Yeah, like 4 in the morning.
At 4 in the morning, and he answered it, and there was nobody there.
Right.
And so he was already hinked up, right?
Right.
So now
these officers get to the door.
Yep.
And they knock on the door and they say Phoenix Police.
Right.
Now whether the person inside heard it or not, unknown, but it was very clear that they knocked on the door pretty hard and they were very clear Phoenix Police.
Right. And he apparently looked through the peephole and didn't see anybody.
Which is correct.
Well, anybody that knows a modicum about police response to a call like that knows we don't stand in front of the door ever. Right.
Right.
It's beaten into your head. Don't stand in front of the door. So, ladies and gentlemen of the audience, if you hear a big bang knock at your door and you hear somebody say police department, and then you look through the people and you don't see anybody there, that's when you know they're real cops. If you look through the people and you see them standing there, then maybe they're not.
That's a good point. Yeah. Because more than likely they're not going to be there.
Right. Real cops are you know, not going to stand in front of a door like that. So he comes out what?
So the door opens and he's not wearing a shirt. And
they never are.
It's pretty clear that he opens the door. Again, from my point of view, looking at both cameras, he opens the door aggressively. Now, to his defense, you know, if he's already pissed off at what happened last time, then that exact scenario is playing out this time where someone's knocking at his door. He looks through the peephole. Nobody's there. It's probably the same assholes I did the last time. He's opening the door aggressively. Right. So I get it. From the officer's point of view, he's opening the door aggressively. Not to mention his right hand is on a gun.
Right.
So this is why I know we were talking before this, how this is just the whole incident just is really a tragic incident, regardless of whether this is a bad guy or good guy. Regardless, it's just tragic for everybody all the way around.
Yes.
Because, you know, this guy is coming out aggressively because of what is in his head. The cops, who really don't even want to be there, now have a guy coming out at them aggressively with a hand on a gun.
And the number of domestic violence calls that I can count where either myself or people I've worked with or cops I know, they say they get there and the man is armed with a gun, are astronomical.
Yes.
And we recently, in the last couple of years, we had a sheriff's deputy in our local community. There's a local park named after him because he went to a DV call and he was one of the most beloved cops in the community. But the male half of the argument had a gun and blasted him, right. Shot and killed him. So once cops go to a DV call and somebody comes to the door and goes, hey, what can I do for, or hey, what do you want, is more of an expected response. If that guy had just come to the door and said, what the fuck do you want?
Right.
Because it would have been a response they expected, and they would have stayed in there. Okay, the dispatcher didn't know their ass from a hole in the ground, and it was or the caller, you know, was full of shit, and we just need to make sure everybody's code four, and then we can clear.
Right. I mean, there's a difference between a guy coming to the door that, you know, is being a borderline asshole, and a guy coming to the door that's being a borderline asshole with a gun.
With a gun.
Right? It's a little. It's with a gun. It's different.
As soon as they see him answer the door with a gun, all of a sudden, everything they thought they knew about this call and the reporting party being full of shit just to get the cops there and how it was all useless and they didn't want to be there. I think as soon as you see the gun, all of that goes out the window. Gone. Period.
Absolutely. All goes out the window. Now it's survival.
And there's another factor that people don't understand is you cannot let him go back inside.
Well, that's true.
And
he was
But that's the thing. Like, they're contacting him. He's coming out. I have literally seen where police have had to shoot somebody in the back because he's armed and he's going back inside where his family still is.
Right.
And they shoot him. Right. So there's all these different things of, okay, first of all, it's not BS. He's got a gun. Second of all, okay, there's still somebody inside. We don't know their status. They said it could have been violent. It was domestic. Did he just kill his whole family, or is he threatening him with a gun? You know what? Now 10,000 possibilities are going through these officers' minds.
And this is all in a fraction of how fast it is to open a door and take a step out.
Right. So if you go watch the video and you start a stopwatch from the moment the door starts to open, right? And then you have somebody else start a stopwatch and have the moment the police register that this guy's holding a gun and the gunshots. It's nothing.
It's a blink of an eye.
Right.
And it does say something. Well, there's a lot of things on this one. So from a tactical point of view, from a law enforcement point of view, that is the perfect reason why officers stand where they stand in the doorway. Mm-hmm. Now, again, not arguing whether this guy was an aggressor or not, but based on the circumstances of what we can see from the videos, he didn't even know that there was an officer to his left when he came out, mm-hmm. which is the reason we set up that way on a door, because the suspect cannot split the difference. He has to pick one, which will then, if it goes sideways, the other officer should have the right angle in order to take care of what needs to be done. So from a tactical point of view, this was literally textbook on what happens when something goes sideways at the door.
Right. Be polite, be professional, have a plan to kill everyone you meet.
Exactly. And that's unfortunately what happened. So when this guy comes out, as he's walking out the door, he sees the contact officer in front of him and is actually takes a step or two toward him, toward the right. This whole time, I would almost guarantee he has no idea that the other officer is to his left and now behind him. Mm-hmm. Because logically, if he came out, that would have been his first contact, would be the officer right next to him.
Right. But you and I both know that 75% of the population is right-handed. And when you're chasing a suspect, guess what? If you don't know which way he turned, if you're going to roll the dice, pick right, because most people being right-handed will turn right. So he comes out and he turns right.
Well, also the door, the handle of the door was on the left side opening inward. And so you have to step to the left to open the door with your right hand or with either hand. But then the first thing you're going to see is whatever is to the right before you see to the left.
Exactly.
And that's exactly where that officer was. So anyway, back to where I was when I saw the first video off the contact officer, which is the one that he that Whitaker look Whitaker, right? Yeah.
Whitaker. Yeah.
Whitaker looked at
suspect.
The suspect. Yeah. I thought that he identified that it was the police and that he was actually giving up. That's kind of what it looked like to me. And then the shots went off. And I was thinking to myself, okay, you know, I know better. There's always more to the story. There's always different angles. There's always just way more, just like that whole Floyd video just got released, which is a whole other topic.
And it doesn't
change nobody anything. Wants to talk about.
It doesn't change anything, but yet it does, right?
It changes a lot of things to me.
Right.
It doesn't change the behavior. I know I'm shifting over, but it doesn't change the behavior of the officer at the end.
No.
But it does change the narrative totally.
Right. Right.
The whole narrative is blown up by that video.
Right.
And unfortunately, it's too late.
Yeah. Right.
No, by design or not, that's a whole other argument.
That's the same way with Whitaker. He turns, and it, according to body camera one, which, and interestingly enough, I like to point out that body camera one, the angle you watched a bunch of times where it looks like he's giving up, is the body camera of the officer who did not fire.
Did not shoot. Correct.
Because when you see his body camera footage, you basically see what he saw. And based on that, I go, yeah, I don't know that I would have fired on this dude either.
Right. Right.
Then you see.
Yeah. Then you see the other one.
Right.
And that's when my mind changed. And again, I'm not saying that anybody deserved to die that day. And I would guarantee that neither one of those cops think that anybody should have died that day.
No.
However, when you see the angle from the other cop, all he sees is the door open aggressively, a guy step out aggressively with his hand on a gun going toward his partner.
Right. He just turns towards the partner. And
that's it.
You know, I mean, unfortunately, you've got a case where, in my opinion, you've got a cop protecting his partner because he thinks this dude's about to turn and fire on him.
Yes. He's already turned toward him.
Yeah. And so he reacts to save his partner's life.
Right. And now who yelled gun? Was that the primary or the secondary officer?
I couldn't tell.
I couldn't either. Someone yelled gun.
Yeah. And the guy gets shot. Then the girlfriend comes out. What'd you do? What'd you do? What'd you do? And here's the thing. Now you got a guy who, you know, this poor cop, if that cop ever looks, the cop who fired, if he looks at the other body camera video and he sees what his partner saw, he'll understand why his partner didn't shoot.
Right.
And his partner will look at his body cam and say, now I understand why he did shoot. He was protecting me. But that doesn't change the fact that this guy now took someone's life that he, whether he was justified in his actions or not, because there's a difference between legally justified action and how it's going to affect you, like spiritually, mentally, psychologically, all that, right? Cop is going to forever, probably forever, ever, ever wonder, how could I have done that differently?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that's why I said it's a tragic incident all the way around. The guy is dead. Whether he was a good guy or a bad guy, the guy is dead. Two officers, especially the shooting officer, you know, are now, God knows what's going on in their heads. The girlfriend, you know, I mean, whether she was the victim of domestic violence or not, I mean, she's got to be screwed up. She just watched her boyfriend get shot right in front of her.
Right.
I mean, just, you know, who knows, the person that made the call for the cops to get there, did he really want someone to die, or did he just want, you know, the cops to go tell this guy to shut up?
Right.
You know, well, now he's dead. And the reason the cops were there that ended up shooting this guy is because he made a call, whether it was bogus or not. I mean, there's just such a ripple effect on this whole, like I said, it's just tragic all the way around. It really is. It really is. And we still probably don't even know everything.
No,
we just
don't.
What we could see from two video angles.
So this is also similar to the, which I brought up, and again, I'm going to butcher the name, Tatiana Jefferson. I won't even try the middle one again. So this is a check the welfare, right? She's there, I guess she's playing video games with her nephew. I don't know. She was hanging out at this house, and they get a check the welfare call at 2:30 in the morning. Right.
Right.
And the call said, hey, you may want to go check on these people. Their front door is open. So, I guess the statement by the family is this woman, A. Tatiana, is playing video games with her nephew inside the house. Why the door was open or whether the door was open, that's what somebody called to report. Two officers responded, and they did what we always do when we're getting a check to welfare, and you know, it's 2 a.m. and you don't know if it's a burglar call or if it's a prowler, or you know, it could be a hot prowl, could be all kinds of different things. They get there and they walk the perimeter of the house, right?
Right.
They check around.
I mean, now again, speaking for myself, mindset on that call is that it's a hot prowl, meaning that someone broke into the house and there's probably victims inside.
Right.
With whoever the bad guy is.
If that the bad same guy's still comes, on scene, right, yeah.
If the bad guy's still on scene. If the bad guy's not on scene, then maybe some bad shit just happened in there.
Right.
This call comes out at 1 p.m. I'm thinking it's probably just a straight burglary. And either the suspect got his shit and he left, or he's probably still in there, but there's probably not a victim.
Right. So in case the audience doesn't understand, most burglaries, like it's not cat burglars wearing ski masks breaking into your house at night while you're home sleeping.
Unless it's the Simply Safe commercial. Just so
you know. Right.
Yeah, right. But anyway.
you know, it's interesting, but you will find that most burglaries happen during the daytime because smart criminals, not stupid ones, know that the best time to hit a house is when everybody's at work.
Yeah, if someone's hitting a house in the nighttime when they know someone is home, that's a special kind of asshole.
It's
totally different.
That's why I always say, like, the type of burglar that specifically seeks to steal from a house when nobody's home is somewhat understandable. They don't want to get caught. They don't want to hurt anybody. They just want to steal your shit and buy some dope.
Right.
The kind of asshole, there's a thrill you get out of breaking into somebody's house with them in it. Because inevitably there's an adrenaline rush because you know, if you get caught, like the consequences are dire and the things that you might have to do to those victims if they wake up
or want to do
to those victims. You know, we did one. It was three guys in a house and the old lady was in the bedroom hiding in the closet on the phone with 911. And when we, Jack, the burglars coming out of the house fleeing, one of them had a freaking, psycho, Norman Bates kitchen knife, Michael Myers kitchen knife, chef's knife in his shirt that he had taken out of the kitchen. So you break into a house and you immediately arm yourself with one of this lady's knives. What were you going to do? Right.
He was bringing a knife to a gunfight. Well, maybe not at her house.
Right. Not at her house. But yeah, break into my house. I always tell people the doors on my house are locked for your protection, not mine.
Right.
But anyway, you're right. Special kind of asshole that breaks into houses at night. So when you get there at 2:30 a.m, this could be as simple as the door blew open or they forgot to shut it all the way. Or it could be a special kind of asshole that is seeking to do really bad guy stuff, not just steal, but hurt you.
Right.
So you check the perimeter, right? So these two guys check the perimeter. And at one point, they get to the backyard and this officer sees this woman, Jefferson, because that's the only part of her name I can pronounce, sees Jefferson in the window and yells, put your hands up, show me your hands, and then bang, fires a shot through the window. I've seen the video. It's pretty fast.
It's very fast.
It's to me, it seems, let me see your hands, bang, right? He says he thought he saw somebody with a gun, I guess. But you can't, with the body camera, see through the window because his flashlight is reflecting off the glass.
Right.
And
So both sides of that, if you think about it. So again, we don't know everything. We weren't there. I can't get myself into his position, but he definitely has a clear view of a person enough to say, put your hands up, which means he could see their hands.
Yeah.
There was a gun that was recovered.
Right.
The end.
Now,
I mean, from his point of view.
I'll tell you the nephew's account, which I didn't initially know, but in researching it for this, the 8-year-old that she was playing video games with says that while they were playing video games, they both heard noises outside the window. So Jefferson took her gun from her purse.
Correct.
And pointed it out the window.
Correct.
Then she was shot.
Right. So now let's see it from her point of view. She hears voices outside. Maybe someone is now breaking into her house and she's going to protect herself. So she grabs her gun and all she sees is a person outside. She's probably blinded by the flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
So she can't see. She can't see that it's the police. And she has a gun in her hand and she probably raises it. Again, you know, think about that. Just tragic all the way around. I mean, how would you want to be part of anybody in that circle? Just a tragic series of events.
But that officer got charged.
He did. Now, again, where's the intent? Don't get me started on that one.
Right. Now, to me, the nephew's statement exonerates the officer. The nephew's statement is she heard a noise, she pulled the gun, she pointed it at the window, and then she got shot. But the nephew's statement, according to what I read, was actually part of what they used to get the indictment against him, which, you go back and listen to our Locker Room podcast episode about Demolition Man being accidentally more accurate about the prediction of the future, because the movie starts with riots and a cop going to prison for doing his job.
Right. Yeah, there's been a few of those lately, hasn't there?
Yeah. And so here's the thing with that situation. And this is what we'll get into on a later episode, because we are going to have this discussion about the selection process, right? We're going to have this discussion about training and about the no stress academy versus the stress academy. We're going to talk about, you know, this kind of stuff that we've been on about since we started this show, which is, you know, when you take these officers and you deliberately hire to be more weak, more timid, more social workery, because that's what you want, more handholdy, what John calls them, TikTok cops. When you hire cops that need to, or are better at, you know, doing kickflips on a skateboard on Instagram with a bunch of kids, hey, that's great. That's great that those kids are seeing a human side of a cop.
Sure.
But
sure.
Is that officer also just as capable of handling a stressful situation? And are we taking people that maybe don't have as much of an ability to use that half second to keep their calm, to keep their composure, and let a situation play out a little bit, understanding, you know, for example, this guy sees the gun and pulls the trigger. Well, would I have seen the gun and pulled the trigger? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know what his training and experience was. I'm an arrested control instructor. I like going hands-on with people. I can tell you in the Arizona case, based on my training and experience, I would have done what my buddy Eddie did. And Eddie shall remain nameless, but he walked into a trailer and the suspect in the trailer, you know, drew a gun on him from 2 feet away. And like I said, don't bring a gun to a knife fight. Eddie didn't have time to draw his gun. Eddie just jumped in and closed the distance and grabbed his gun and turned it on him, right? And took it away from him. Maybe if I was at this Arizona call as the arresting control instructor and I'm the contact officer who he, you know, sees him come out, I might have reached in and, you know, grabbed his gun and grabbed his wrist to stop him, because that's where my mind is trained to do, is to get control of the weapon at that distance and not to draw my gun when I'm that close to a suspect. But that's my mindset. I don't know how this officer was trained.
Right.
I don't know what his skill level is.
Well, that's your mindset, but you still might have shot him.
I might have
and might have totally skipped that and gone right to your gun because of how fast that happened. And you know,
and I
you're
wasn't
talking
there.
And you weren't there. You weren't there. And you know, you're talking about this whole selection, which I know is going to be another podcast, but this is not new.
No.
This is something that has been chipped away over time.
Since probably the mid-80s.
Well, I can tell you in my academy class, we started, I want to say 84 or 86 recruits, and we graduated 42. So we had a little more than a 50% attrition in my class, which was pretty much the going rate at the time.
I was going to say that's what they all prepared us for. We would get to the academy and they'd say, half of you won't be here to graduate.
Right. And they were right on the friggin' money in my class. Now, fast forward, at least up until the time that I retired, I mean, you've got to do some. I mean, there's so many. Let's not even discuss the selection of getting the person to the academy. But while they're in the academy, I mean, maybe other officers can come on that know more about this. But from what I saw, being on the outside, it takes an act of God to get someone kicked out of the academy.
Right, and we're talking about what kind of a panel we're gonna have because we want to give this a serious like discussion.
And I'm speaking LAPD. Maybe it's not the same in other small agencies. Maybe it's not the same in other states. But out here, yeah.
Well, here's how the process and California has been viewed for a long time, and I mean decades, as the shining example of training, the shining example of the tip of the spear. Like California law enforcement, man, we were the best trained cops. We had, you know, because we had Post and we had all these different things that we had put in place in police reforms dating back to the 40s and 50s, you know, William H. Parker and the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training and these legal requirements. You know, I've always talked about the guy I worked with at my department who got hired and was working the streets before he ever attended an academy. And that was Ohio. Right. And that was not that long ago. And that would never happen in California. Never, never happen. Right. So the way I was always taught the process worked was you have a really rigorous screening and hiring process, right? And you weed out a ton of people through the interview, the oral board, right? Right. First of all, are you smart enough? They give you a written test. Second of all, do you have enough common sense? They give you an oral board. Third, are you psychologically fit to do the job, or are you a freaking nut who just wants to, you know, wear a badge and have power, right? You get through all of that, right? The background process. Are you somebody susceptible to corruption because you don't know how to manage your money? And if, you know, the right drug dealer comes along and offers you money, you'll take it, you know, all those different things. But then you got to the academy. The academy weeded out another 50% of the people that had managed to get through the hiring process.
Right.
Then you take those 50% of the people that made it out of the academy and you put them in a training car.
And you're probably
going to lose 10.
Another quarter.
10. Okay, 25%. Let's say you're going to lose 25%.
Yeah, even less. But the point you're trying to make, which I'm agreeing with, is the training officers and the system was set up to find the weakness and to say, hey, this person is a liability to the department, to the people that we're servicing, and to himself or herself.
Right.
And it's just in the best interest of everybody. Yes, we put a X amount of money into this guy through all the training, but it's in the best interest of everybody involved that we got to let this guy go. And that's why you have a 1-year probation.
Right. And if people don't understand what probation is, like you go to a regular job and you spend 3 months on probation, and then you're off and then you're protected or whatever. You're just like every other employee. No. Like my department was 18 months of probation, not even 12. Right. And the probationary period is if we don't like you, we can fire you. Now, I mean, they don't, they typically, you know, go through the same process of firing someone for cause because they don't want to take all this money they've invested in them and throw it out the window. But at some point you need to know whether to fish or cut bait. And when a dog won't hunt, you know, when you identify somebody that is not cut out to be a police officer, doesn't matter how far they've gotten, the liability of somebody that you can identify on the streets with a gun and a badge that shouldn't be doing this job, you get rid of them. And that was what probation and training cars were for. And by all, if you made it through all of that, there was a reasonable assumption that you were mostly competent to do the job.
Right.
Now the philosophy is,
but not perfect.
But not perfect. Right.
None of us are.
But the philosophy seems to be now, do whatever you can to help them get through the academy. Make sure they pass.
Yeah.
Then it's do whatever first it's do whatever you can in the hiring process to make sure we get more of the kinds of people that we need to make us look good publicly, right? We need to appease the political, spectrum of we want this kind of person.
You know, we're going down a rabbit hole right now.
Well, but this is what I'm saying is that all of these things.
But the system wants those people.
Right.
For a reason.
But it
far beyond this.
Well, yeah. That's a whole other. But
yeah, that's what I mean. You're going down a rabbit hole.
But if we can at least admit that these officers, we might be failing them just by virtue of the fact that they're not being properly prepared to do the job under the conditions they're going to experience. That's the department's fault. That's the city's, that's the public's fault for not saying, no, you don't ease up on these guys. These guys are going to see the worst. These guys are going to experience the worst. They're going to be tested. They're going to be, we need the best, the brightest, the strongest. We don't want you to be easy. Everybody understands why the NASA selection process is so freaking rigorous and hard, right? And for 20,000 applicants, you get one astronaut, right? Everybody understands that process because you can't make a mistake up there. You can't, right?
Right.
Well, maybe it's time they start understanding that the old ways of beating people up verbally, emotionally, mentally, physically, internally, externally, during training and during the selection process, that served a purpose.
Yeah, I think that people nowadays don't believe that you could have an officer that is hard and that is willing and able to do dirty stuff very easily, while at the same time be compassionate.
Right.
Somehow it worked before.
Yeah.
Right. Somehow it did.
It did. You go watch old footage of cops or take the videos and stuff like that. These guys were smiling. They were shaking hands with the citizenry. They were joking around with the guys at the coffee shop. They were, playing, throwing the ball with the kids every once in a while, walking foot beats. They were part of the community. But then when some asshole did asshole stuff,
they flipped.
You flip the switch. It's time to do, it's time to do work. And, you didn't threaten a cop's family back then. You didn't talk shit. There's a lot of guys, John and I talked about it, the old school gangsters that understand the game, which is if I fight, I'm going to get my ass kicked. But I can't.
If I act like a human being, I'll be treated like a human being. Exactly. Funny how that works.
Strange. Yeah.
I got into a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and it was back on the whole Floyd thing. And it's just funny how some people just don't want to take responsibility or don't want to believe that other people play a hand in the outcome of events.
Right.
And I tried to explain to the person, and I probably didn't, but I tried to explain to the person that the argument of what the officer did at the end by having his knee on Floyd's neck for nine minutes, however long, nobody's arguing that that was right or wrong.
Right.
You have a total consensus
right.
that this was all, that was bullshit and that he should have been fired, if not more. Nobody's arguing that.
Nope.
But there were several things that Floyd did in order to be in that position.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that because he passed a counterfeit 20, he should die. Nobody is saying that.
Nope.
However, in order to be in that position, there were several events that were under his control that he decided to play with that brought those two together in the bad event at the end.
Right.
And that's all I was trying to say. I was trying to say is that there's more to than what you see in that case, a 9-minute snippet. There's right. way more to it. But again, you know, people think that cops are perfect and cops are infallible. And if anything bad happens, it has to be the cop's fault. It has
right.
to be.
Right.
Because nobody else makes mistakes.
Well, let me put this question out there. And I used to use sexual assault as an example, and it's still one of my favorite examples, but people get all wrapped around the axle anytime you talk about it. So I'll just use your teenage kid is walking through the shittiest neighborhood in your city at 2 o'clock in the morning, wearing a brand new leather jacket and the most expensive Air Jordans you've ever seen, flashing a wad of cash around, and he gets beaten and robbed for his jacket, shoes, and cash. He didn't deserve to get beaten and robbed for his jacket, shoes, and cash. Absolutely not. He was the victim of a mugging, a robbery, or whatever it was. But at the same time, when that kid comes home and he goes, "Dad, I got beaten and robbed for my jacket, shoes, and cash," I'm going to look at him and go, "What in the fuck were you doing in that neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning wearing expensive shit and flashing your cash?" And yeah, you didn't think, you didn't understand. It's the same reason, you know, people always talk about like Steve Irwin, and I know that's a hot topic. And I go, well, he did dangerous stuff.
Right.
And a stingray stung him. Yeah, it's tragic. And we all lost Steve Irwin and whatever. But when you do dangerous things, or when you put yourself in a situation where you're exposed to the criminal element, you can't be surprised when the criminal element gets you. And vice versa, if you are a criminal and you go up against police officers, or even if you're an innocent citizen and you go up against police officers, there are things that you can do to both help and hurt your circumstances. And sure. knowing what those things are is freaking a huge, you can't point that out. It's, you know, like you said, people that, well, it must have been the cops. No, this guy, he led, they wouldn't have done anything they had done if it didn't require it. Now,
well, again, on this Floyd thing, and, you know, obviously we're out of time and, you know, yep. this is going off on a whole other tangent, but it was actually very interesting to watch the whole video. Yeah. And what's funny about what I just said a minute ago about the person I was talking to, didn't even watch the whole video.
Right.
Right. When you see the whole video, there's a lot of things that people will see that blew a whole bunch of bullshit narrative right out of the water, number one.
Right.
And number two, they probably did a lot of things that many officers, including myself, would not have had patience for.
Yep.
So if you guys haven't seen it, look it up, go find it before Facebook or Instagram takes it down like they're doing, and go watch that whole video.
Yeah. It doesn't change, like we said, doesn't change our opinions about the end.
Right. Right.
But it does explain that this man was no choir boy. I mean, hell, he freaking held a gun to a pregnant woman. You know, we know he wasn't a choir boy. But just because we can identify what he did that caused him problems doesn't mean that we agree with what happened.
Right.
So, anyway, right. you're anyway. Right. We are out of time. Thanks. I appreciate it. Because, you know, when people send us questions and they ask us to talk about stuff, we try and do it. And it also got me out of telling another one of my stories. Everybody's been saying, "You've only told one. Why didn't you tell another one?" And I was like, all right, maybe it's time. Well, then we got this request. And so I got out of it. Haha, weaseled out of it. So you have anything you want to add?
No.
Right?
Not about it. I can go off in so many different directions now. It's just better to... No.
we just start digging another rabbit hole.
Oh, gosh. There's too many rabbit holes around yeah. me.
Okay. Well, then, as always, you guys can find us on social media. I should be posting pictures, or John should be posting pictures relatively soon of some of the new merch that we're getting done. for you guys. And it's limited run stuff because, you know, we're not millionaires, so we can't just get a crap load of this stuff made, but we can get enough made to where we'll make it available. And then it's first come, first serve. So that should be, you should be seeing posts, when this episode comes out, either the same day or the next day. Other than that, I have nothing. John, I hope you're having a good vacation. We'll get you back on our next episode, and we'll have some fun stuff. Again, if you have episode ideas, stuff you want us to talk about, people you want us to have on, people send us names. Sometimes sending us names helps, but if you have contact information for these people, that helps even more. Just because tracking all these people you want us to have on down and finding contact information can be a bit of a bear. So,
you know, real quick on a side note, sure. If anybody out there either knows someone or is part of a training program for any of these police departments, they'd be an interesting person to get on.
Absolutely.
And interview, because I'm the guy on the outside looking in. I'd really like to know what really is happening back there.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, okay. Then until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.